As often as I've done this, I've got to be in the 190s by now. You'd think I'd remember to have Jake queued up But the past few times, it's been like, until I hit the opening, it's like, oh shit, that's right, I have to get Trust Me queued up, or won't have anything. And it's just been going on. It's like, I feel stupid because I do it. It's like, I should know this by now. Come on. This isn't brain surgery, so... I would thank somebody for... Totally Addicted to Bass. Look at the show notes, because I forgot to grab her name off of Second Life. She's a DJ for the Tribe of Lost Angels, who has been taking to DJing Demaya Savant's parties, which I am at when I can. I'm trying to get there now, because in the end of May, beginning of June, I won't be able to, because they're on Friday and Saturday, and I got to play that day. So, sometimes she'll humor me during those times, and she'll put one on Thursday. I want to thank Reepso, because a little while ago, he said that if I wanted to, I could use his stream, and I have been using it to go and listen to, or not listen to, I've been using it to go and record my podcast. As I've said before, the way Knockerly runs Pulse Radio, he likes things encoded really high. So, my two-hour show, for him, is about 110 megs. Well, I can't do that on my Podomatic. I'll run out of space. So, I go on Reepso Radio, and I encode it there, and then the same thing ends up being about 20, which is a lot more doable. We've got Cody in the room. And that's all we've got. I'm sorry to anybody who wanted to tune in today and found me not on there. I'm not even trying, because I went on to Pulse Radio 10 minutes early, making sure, and it said that the stream was down. So I'm like, I've got 10 minutes. So I put up an update saying, go to reepsoradio.com and listen to me there. And I will have a link to it. In fact, I'll... Well, no, I won't put it up now, because I'm going to try and... I have this bad habit of being completely quiet when I'm talking. I do want to plug Greetings from Nowhere. Great little podcast done by Nicole and Christina, who are boss and secondary boss to me right now in... the Sherlock Holmes play, Nicole being the director, and Moriarty. Yes, we have a female Moriarty. And I don't know how I feel about that. That's just kind of one of those things I'll just kind of... It's like, you know, I may have gone and done a little bit of looking, but I can understand why she didn't, so I just kind of leave that to her. I figure if she can do both, more power to her. Not what I would have done, but then again, I'm not her, and I've never been a director. I don't know how much else she had on her mind. We were doing True West at the time, so she was helping with that. I don't know where her real life was like. It could have just been easier to say, you know what? Screw it. I'll do it. In which case, hey, I think she does a wonderful job. You know, it's taken me a little bit of time to get used to it. I'm not going to lie. You know, I'm a Holmes fan, and it just didn't quite make sense there. But then it was like, okay, I still don't get it, but she's doing very good, so I'm not going to complain. I'm going to start recommending it. You know, once it gets closer, probably around. I'd love to get Nicole over here to talk about her, and maybe do an interview with her. Her and Christina, or see if we could get like a whole cast or something, you know, bring my laptop down for a day, you know, do a little, because that's something they did with True West, and I'd like to see us do it too, is kind of get in the media a little bit. So I don't know how we do that though here, so I've never done it. So, but their thing about From Guilty Pleasures, From Greetings from Nowhere. See, this is the disadvantage of being live. You fuck up, you can't go beep. Okay, rewind. It's there now for everybody to hear. But the thing from Greetings from Nowhere is Guilty Pleasures. This is part one. They're tackling movies, TV, music, and food. Today is food and music. Or no. Well, actually, yeah, today was food, music, and movies. So I guess part two is going to be television. They just kind of covered a little bit of everything. But they also ask for you to write in, and I did send a note on Facebook to Christina with a couple of mine for music and TV. I forgot they did food. I don't really have... I put down for music, wrestling themes, doesn't matter, WCW, WWF, ECW, Ring of Honor. I just like listening to the music that they pick for the wrestlers, because there are some times that they can nail that really on the head. Disco Inferno is one. It was a goofy song, but it was a goofy character, and it really did some good. The Honky Tonk Man, in the same vein, was really good. Ken Shamrock, Goldberg, those two really got good music. Jake the Snake Roberts, I think, had some of the best music. Because it didn't really sound like anything else at the time. You knew once it started up who it was. Not the one I was playing just now. Let's see if I'm not sure if I have that one. It'll just be playing in the background, but you'll hear it. So, in fact, I'll kill my mic here for a second so you can hear the beginnings that gave it away, because this is the only one that started like this. So, and I mean, it did that a lot back then, but this one just really, this one and the Bushwhackers. I don't have the Bushwhackers, though, so it'll have to, here's the other one of Jake. Yes, that is Jake Roberts. It was honestly wrestling music that got me really interested in looking at music as something more than AC/DC or Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen. These were the ones at the time that I liked. I was very sheltered, and it wasn't in, you know, it wasn't that my mom would say, you can't listen to this. It was just where I lived. When I started getting into music, I was in Catholic school, and it was Bruce Springsteen. I had been a little bit into it with Neil Diamond and Queen and stuff like that, but when I really started getting, you know, branching out from, you know, Billy Joel was one too. Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA got me. So did America. I'm a big USA nut. I like the USA. I like songs that don't necessarily glorify it as an entity, but just kind of make me feel glad for living there. Born in the USA, America are two songs like that. Bon Jovi, Let It Rock has always been one of my favorites, and that's because of the organ. The organ in it is just cool. But then I started watching wrestling with my dad, and it was Rock and Roll Buck Zumhoff that my dad says is... I'll get to that in a second, Cody, but it was Rock and Roll Buck Zumhoff, who I actually did see wrestle when I lived in Montevideo, and he used to come down with a ghetto blaster, and of course, then I needed a ghetto blaster, and they got me one, so, and I had that thing for like 15 years before I had to throw it away. It was a single cassette, big ghetto blaster tape deck. But the cool thing was, it had shortwave. It had shortwave band 1 and 2. And I would spend just as much time listening to shortwave as I would AM or FM, sometimes more. And it wasn't that I... It's all about we didn't start the fire. Oh, yes. That is one of my all-time favorites. I like that song. That song's in a genre all its own. You gotta remember, though, Cody, that was when you were in a... You were a kid. I was out of college at that point. Rebel Yell, I know this is heresy to you. I don't think I've heard it. But don't get on me, because, like I've told you, oftentimes I'll pick up songs, like, on the radio, and I'll like them, but I'll never catch what it is or who it is. So, I may have heard it, I heard it before, or I heard it after they announced who and what it was. So, I'm surprised Reap and Polly aren't in here. I know Reap's on. I think Polly's on. Oh, well. I do recommend their shows. They are on... Let me click on... Can I do that? No, I can't. That's right. Okay. Let's open... I'll do a plug here for Reepso Radio. And believe me, it's worth it. It is very fun to listen to. Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific and Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific. So no matter what, I'll be able to listen to them. That's one show that I am very dedicated to. Hoofcast I didn't get to listen to last night because none of the streams worked for me. So, it was just kind of like, oh, well. And there goes Cody. See, that's the thing. He's reacting a minute later to what I'm saying. And what he said, well, perhaps next week I'll be set up out of Wenatchee. Apparently he's moving. If you need help with that, let me know. I'll help you move if I can. So when I have time... And he found his headset, so when I have time, I'll actually pop over and appear on the show. Send me a Facebook note with the names Cody. Otherwise, I'll never remember them, but I will look them up when I'm done. And so we may have a co-host, kind of. And Cody said this. He said, would you rather live in a house in the middle of nowhere, or would you rather live in an apartment? And I honestly agree. You know, somebody didn't, but I would rather live in a house in the middle of nowhere. I mean, whether I'm renting it or not is beyond the point. A house is all your space, all to yourself. We wanted a house for ages. It's just too expensive to move. Honestly, it was the last time we checked. I should check again, because it's spring coming up, summer. This would be a good time to move if we did. Of course, we just signed a lease, too, so we're kind of screwed there. But yeah, wrestling music is one of my biggest guilty pleasures, and it's not a guilty pleasure in the fact that I'll admit to it. I love it. I think it's some of the best music. But I don't talk about it much because of the whole reason I don't talk about wrestling much. It's just not something that people look upon very highly. That's kind of Neanderthal, That's the guys sitting in the speakeasies betting on who's going to win, Or it's a joke going at the other end because of the... it's all fake, and you get the scenes from the 20s and 30s when the screw-up happened that somebody published the results for the show of that night in that day's newspaper. So, they got scenes of people sitting there pointing and laughing and all that stuff, so... Which is sad, because... Athletically, say what you want about it being fake or whatnot. Athletically, that's probably the hardest on your body of all the sports. Because you're constantly taking bumps in ways that you weren't meant to. I mean, not that a tackle is all that natural, but, getting body slammed, getting clotheslined. A pile driver can fuck you up 7 ways from Sunday. It almost paralyzed Stone Cold Steve Austin. It did paralyze... Darren Drysdale, I believe his name is. So, Zuck, zuck. Yeah, that's how I feel sometimes when I say that to people. I feel like a grunt. Like a little orc peon there. It's like, okay, my IQ points just dropped like 200 to this person. But it is. If you listen to some of the music's really good. One of my favorites of all time, and I still smile whenever I hear it, is Roddy Piper's. It's a clan march. I don't know what it is. It's just every time I've heard it, it's in a group of clan marches. And I smile because one of my favorite shows of all time is the 1992 Royal Rumble. And he won the Intercontinental title, the only singles title. In fact, I think it might honestly be the only the only singles title he ever had in his career in the WWF, which is a travesty. But that's my opinion. He just looks so happy, and I'm smiling now just to think about it, because he looked like a kid. And this was not a young man at the time. You know, he was in his 30s. So, I think. Probably. Yeah, I think he's in his 50s now. So, you know, mid to late 30s he was when this happened. But it was just so cool. Speaking of wrestling, I know wrestling gets a lot of, Loktaro Gar. Yes, that's... Now I've got... I've got him typing in Warcraft Orcish, Cody. But there is... I will say this. Say what you want about them getting celebrities involved, like Pete Rose getting tombstoned by Kane, or, you know, William Shatner wrestling, Jay Leno wrestling. There is one guy who was in a wrestling event who did it spot on, and it was Drew Carey of all people. He was in a Royal Rumble to promote a pay-per-view he was doing. And he did it just perfectly. He came down, a lot of people don't know, Drew Carey, despite his size, is quite an athletic man. He came in, he had sweats and a sweat top and, you know, jogging shoes. He actually came in looking like he was going to the gym to work out. And he had his glasses on, too, and he came out, I don't remember who it was. But, two guys were fighting over in the corner, and of course they were really getting in, they didn't see him, or they didn't, they just didn't think shit of it. It's like, ah, fuck, here's the celebrity, we'll leave him alone. And I've got Cody, look it up, Cody, I swear to God, this is one of the greatest things you'll ever see. He comes in, and I don't know if he pushes them, but they were on like the second rope. I think they were trying to suplex one or the other of them off. I don't remember if he pushed them off. I think he did. I think he pushed them off. And he was the only one in the ring. And it was just wonderful because he was all happy and smiles. It's like, and you can honestly see, I don't think it was, but you can honestly see where he was like, hey, you know, this might not be so bad. And who comes out but the absolute god-awful worst person to come out, and that was Kane. And we're not talking bald-headed Kane, we're talking red and black and face mask Kane, the guy that would scare the holy bejesus out of you. And it was perfect because he honestly looked, and you could just tell he was very happy. He was wearing dark clothes because I'm sure he shit himself when he saw that come out at him. And he honestly tried to pay him off. He pulled a Ted DiBiase and tried to hand him money. I don't know if it was like, here, take this and jump out, or here, take this and don't kill me. And I don't know if Kane swung at him or whatnot, but he eliminated himself, which was the best. It was just handled. So he wasn't in there too long. He was in there maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes, just long enough to play it up. And he was smart in how they were smart in how he got out, because he acted real cocky, like, oh, there ain't nothing to this, and who comes up but the but the wrecking machine, Kane. In fact, I'm going to look and see if I can find a link to that. That somebody had to have put that in there by now. Drew Carey. For those of you who think I'm lying, I am not. This actually happened. Oh my god, they actually met each other backstage, too. That is so awesome. So there was already a setup to this. He probably set something there. Oh, True carries an unlockable thing in a game somewhere. Come on. They did show Kane coming out. They don't show the whole thing. Yeah, it is. I don't have sound. Oh, duh, because I've got sound muted. But yeah, you can just see the big red machine come in. And this guy is. He's big. He is fucking huge, Kane is. But you can... Drew's on the rings and he's trying to get the referees. I don't know if he's trying to get him to turn Kane around. He's just paranoid right now. I'm going to put a link in so Cody can watch this. It's good. I'll try and find a better copy of this where they actually have Drew Carey come out. But it doesn't look like they have that. And that really sucks because that is like one of the greatest moments in Royal Rumble history is Drew Carey, a non-wrestler, just having a ball, doing wrestling, being in the Royal Rumble. Now, the second guilty pleasure I have, and I just grabbed a couple of more songs off of video, is adult or porn music. And here's the thing that gets me. There are some ways that I can see, yes, this was made for porn. But there are so many things. I mean, just beautiful songs. I mean, we're talking orchestral songs. They're in porn movies that you're like, now, did the group that were recording this know what it was going into? Because I don't think they would have been recording this quite so well if they did. And for those of you who are debating whether or not that can be hit, this is actually from Vivid Video's The Jungle. And is one of the main things that I will play for anybody who says the porn music is that bullcrap about Jiggy Wow Wow. That's like saying all 80s music sounded like, you know, the Safety Dance. Well, yeah, it was a popular song in the 80s, but you had so much else that you could listen to. This is one of the reasons I like music and pornography. And I know, like I said, this is going to be probably tune a lot of people out, but before you tune out, bear with me. I promise I'm not pulling a fast one. This is beautiful music. I just want you to hear it. Talk while this is going in the background. But see what I mean? I mean, now, can you imagine that group of musicians? Because these are honest musicians doing this. Getting into a room saying, God, this is a wonderful piece of music, playing it, and just feeling good. And what's this going to? Oh, it's going to be set in a sex scene. You can almost hear that wah, 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 wah in the background because it's like, what? I just played this beautiful music that could be considered classical in some ranges for a porn movie. It boggles your mind. It's like, what the fuck? It's just weird. Rape of the Air. What the hell? I hope that isn't what you're talking about with the music I played. I think it's beautiful. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Rape of the Ear. Flee for your lives. Well, it takes a, but see, that's my point, too. You know, by saying that I like music and pornography, people are going to think that I like all of it. Well, no. I don't like all wrestling themes. I don't like all of any type. You're going to have things you like. You're going to have things you don't. It's just music that I... It's music that I would normally like anyway. It's just surprising me to find it in this medium, being used for this reason. You know, I've never heard Bow Chicka Wow Wow, and I honestly never want to, because people say it so fucking much. And, like I said, it may be a cool song. I don't know, I've never heard it. But people have stereotyped pornography music with that. And I think, you know, maybe this is just me, maybe nobody honestly ever thought about it. I've said it dozens of times on this show. I think that a lot, especially the music, I think it's still playing. Yeah, the music playing right now would be something that I would buy on a soundtrack. I'm serious. If somebody released the soundtrack to Vivid's The Jungle, I'd buy it in a heartbeat. And I'd play it for everybody I could think of. Because it's pretty music. It's only like five or six tracks, I think. I've got at least one more I can get. The problem is, with movies like The Jungle, the one I'm playing now, I actually brought up, I think I brought up Audacity, put the DVD in, went to the scene that this is a part of, because they didn't have, you know, the moaning and whatnot in the background. They didn't have that track going. It was just the music. So I could bring it up, and when it clicked, okay, there we go, and I just started recording. And this is towards the end of the scene. The beginning of the scene has its own little separate thing. So I want to get that part, but they actually throw a sound effect in there at one point. The first part's like 4 minutes, and I can't remember. See, this is a 3 minute song, but I only recorded 3 minutes of it. I just looped it. And I'm not sure if that one in the beginning loops. So if it doesn't loop, I'm going to be missing some of it, because I don't want the sound effect in there. It's just a bzzz, you know, it's a electric charge. You can't run a sound like that through music like this. It blows it. And that was no Freudian slip there, believe me. I know somebody now is going to say, Freudian slip? Oh, ha-ha, yeah. The other one is Insane Clown Posse. And I consider them a guilty pleasure only because a lot of people don't... It's just like porn music. All three of these are musics that people don't really give much credit to. The Insane Clown Posse has some really good music. It's just like everything else I've said. They got some songs I don't like. Rainbows and Stuff, I think, is a completely stupid song. But Tilt the Whirl, which is on that same CD, is one of my favorites. So, you know, It's just how you look at it. If you want to laugh, go to YouTube and look up Bow Chicka Wow Wow. The first video will mess with you. Okay. Like I said, send me that in a Facebook note. I'm not trying to, you know, put all the brunt on you, but I honestly will not remember this. So please put all these little things in a note, and when I'm done and when I'm uploading, then I'll listen to them. I'll go check them out. I'm going to play one other thing that's become a bit of a thing now. And Cody, if you thought the other one was ear rape, be prepared for some brain rape. This is a Tom Lehrer song. Tom Lehrer, I don't know if he still is, was a Harvard math professor who, at a very young age, was very gifted in satire and piano playing. So he, as he got older, he would, you know, do, he did one called The Masochism Tango, Poisoning Pigeons in the Park, The Hunting Song, which is wonderful, quite a few others, and I'm trying to get some of them. But this one, and I've got a link to the video that I found it on, and I'm linking to that video specifically because it is the easiest one to follow. So, I'm going to play Tom Lehrer's The New Math. This was recorded in the 60s. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, and sometimes a cigar is a big brown dick with a fat politician sucking on the wet end of it. You know, never thought about it that way, but that's true. So, somewhere, I'm sure. So here's Tom Lehrer with The New Math. This is, like I said, this is in the 60s when the new math was just getting going. So I will shut up and I'll let you listen to that, and believe me, your head's going to hurt by the end of it.
You who have small children may have perhaps been put in the embarrassing position of being unable to do your child's arithmetic homework because of the current revolution in mathematics teaching known as the new math. So as a public service here tonight, I thought I would offer a brief lesson in the new math. Tonight, we're going to cover subtraction. Consider the following subtraction problem. Shall we put up here? 342 minus 173. Here's how they do it now. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the tens place. Now that's really 4 tens, so you make it 3 tens, regroup, and you change the 10 to 10 ones, and you add to the 2 and get 12, and you take away 3, that's 9. Is that clear? Now instead of 4 in the tens place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 10 to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look in the hundreds place. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 10 ones, and you know why 4 plus minus 1 plus 10 is 14 minus 1, because addition is commutative, right? And so you got 13 tens, and you take away 7, and that leaves 5. Well, 6, actually, but... the idea is the important thing. Now go back to the hundreds place. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Everybody get 1? Not bad for the first day. Hooray for new math. Here, cuckoo math. It won't do you a bit of good to read new math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Now, that actually is not the answer that I had in mind, because the book that I got this problem out of wants you to do it in base 8. But don't panic. Base 8 is just like base 10, really, if you're missing 2 fingers. Shall we have a go at it? Hang on. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the 8's place. Now that's really 4 8's, so you make it 3 8's, regroup, and you change an 8 to 8 1's, and you add to the 2, and you get 1 2 base 8, which is 10 base 10, and you take away 3, that's 7. Okay? Now, instead of 4 in the 8's place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 8, to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look at the 64's. 64. How did 64 get into it? I hear you cry. Well, 64 is 8 squared, don't you see? I ask a silly question, you get a silly answer. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 8 ones. You add those 1s to the 3, and you get 1 3 base 8, or in other words, in base 10, you have 11, and you take away 7, and 7 from 11 is 4. Now go back to the 64s. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Now, let's not always see the same hands. Whoever got 1 can stay after the show and clean the erasers. Hooray for new math, new math. It won't do you a bit of good to read new math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Come back tomorrow night. We're going to do fractions. Now, I've often thought I'd like to write a mathematics textbook someday because I have a title that I know will sell a million copies. I'm going to call it Tropic of Calculus.
Yes, I do listen to that a lot, and honestly, I'm trying to memorize it. And believe me, it is not easy. Still trying to find a good clip of Drew Carey in the Royal Rumble, but all they have is Kane and Drew Carey. They don't have his whole thing. I guess I should be happy, but I'm not, because I really want... The joke isn't as funny if you just watch that part of it. You really have to see him before it, too, to really get in on the whole joke. And that sucks. You know, it's just one of those things that... pisses me off, quite honestly. But, anyway. The other thing that they talked about was guilty pleasures for movies. Now, I only put a couple down, and one somebody may say is not a guilty pleasure, but to me it is, just because of how it's looked upon with whoever I seem to run into. It's kind of like, here's another one I forgot all about. It's Star Trek V. It's kind of like Star Trek V in the fact that when I mention it, I mean, I know a lot of people now, apparently, who like it. It's just, but there, I've always, up until now, run into the ones who just think I'm brain dead for liking it. And one is Dungeons and Dragons. And me and Christina honestly looked at me weird in that. And it is. I understand where people who like Dungeons and Dragons don't like it, but I've always been able to pull myself away from something usually enough to judge it. It may take a couple of times, but then once I see, you know, where it is and what it's doing, it's okay. And Dungeons and Dragons, to all you naysayers who may have only seen it in the theater, I know what I'm going to say is going to sound completely stupid, but go rent it. And I'm only saying this for this reason. Watch the deleted scenes. As in a lot of movies that I tend to run into liking that have this problem, look up the periodic table of elements song. I have it. It's really cool. I like that one. That's also by Tom Lehrer. Not the Star Trek. Don't mess with the Trek, man. Well, no, I'm talking about D&D. Now, I don't mess with Star Trek. I think Star Trek's a great franchise. I like a lot of what... back again, there are a lot of things I don't like, too, but on the whole, I like it. But D&D... there were a lot of things that were explained in the scenes they couldn't do because they didn't have the effects budget to do them, so they had to cut them out. That really would have made that movie tons better, including... I don't know, maybe somebody will have this. Let's see if we can look it up. Including the alternate ending. That is probably one of the best endings I've ever seen to a movie. I don't know if anybody's taken the time to... No, of course not, because nobody likes the... You know, this is where I really hate the internet. Because... And this is why I'm going to try and get my DVD thing going, and I'm going to try and capture that. Try and capture the ending, because the ending is so much better. The one that they didn't use is so much better than the cheesy one that they used at the end of the actual movie. My opinion, but I think a lot of people would agree with it once they see it. But Dungeons and Dragons definitely is one... Big Trouble in Little China. And even I can't explain that one. It's just one of those movies that you either really like it or you just really don't get it. And I'm not going to say that I get it, I just really like it. And I just thought of another one too, The Fiendish Plot of Dr. Fu Manchu. I'm sure you like it on the whole, what? Like what? I like Star Wars too, though. I will say Star Wars has been pillaged more often than Trek has, and certainly a lot sloppier than Trek has. So, but yeah, Big Trouble in Little China is just one of those movies that you either will let it take you where it wants to, or you just won't bother. Because there is no halfway with Big Trouble in Little China. It's just that way. You really have to be able to separate yourself from any reality that you know to get that story. But it's once you do, it's neat. I mean, it's not any different than most movies where it's just kind of sugar-coated in some places, and it's silly in some places. But they pull it off. If you like that kind of thing, they pull it off. The other I told her is Flash Gordon. It's just like Big Trouble in Little China. I can't explain why I like it. There really isn't any one thing. It's just neat to me for some reason. I'm sure Queen has a lot to do with it. I'm a Queen fan. So that's cool. But I don't know. It's just one of those things. It just kind of popped into my head. It's like, okay, yeah, I suppose that'd be one. On movies, I just got done this weekend watching the movie This Film Is Not Yet Rated, and the documentary IndieSex, both by the Independent Film Channel. I recommend both of them. Silly George Lucas ruined a good thing on Star Wars. Yes, he did. But they're both basically on how censorship works in movies. If you're into that kind of thing, both of these are highly recommended. Very obvious warning. IndieSex does OG have sex scenes that they show in it, usually to talk about what they're, you know, what act they may be talking about, or, you know, there are a lot of times like Boys Don't Cry or Short Bus or one with Tracy Ullman, I can't remember the name, but they show it just to say, okay, and you know, this is the movie that they're talking about. Midnight Cowboy shows up. It's really good. The second disc wasn't much. It was there are 4 episodes. Old boss of mine worked on the parody of Flash Gordon. It was Flesh Gordon, and then he worked on Rose Red. I've never heard of Rose Red. I've seen Flash Gordon though. That was cute. Flash Gordon was had to have been based on Barbarella. Just looking at the way a lot of those scenes were shot, you could watch Flash Gordon and you could watch Barbarella and see two parts of the same movie. But this film is not yet rated. Tackles the MPAA film board and actually outs the film board members and the appeals members. They hire a private eye to find the names, and they put the names in, and their pictures, in for the film board, for the review board anyway, not the appeals board. But they get all but one person's name and info and face for the class of 2005. And it is just really neat to watch. So It's definitely recommended, especially if you're into art, you know, arty movies or movies about film. Then you'll definitely get a kick out of it because they cover a lot of the, you know, in IndieSex they cover a lot of the various topics that people generally have had a problem with showing on the screen, and they're good. I mean, yeah, like I said, they show scenes, but it's a documentary. So, you know, they show them, they don't show them to get you off, they show them In one case, they showed it. This was in this film is not yet rated. They were talking about, because that's an interview thing too. They do a lot of interviews. But they had a. You've not seen Rose Red. Honestly, I've never even heard of it. But then again, there are a lot of things I've never heard of, so I don't usually worry about that. But they were talking about hip thrusting. You know, if you were filming a sex scene, it was okay if you were just kind of laying there and kind of implying, whereas if you were hip thrusting and, you know, kind of showing it, it was worse. And they had this, I don't know if they were looping it or not, I was laughing too hard to watch. They had a lady, you know, guy was taking a lady, she was bent over holding onto the wall, and he was just, you know, thrusting, and they had a little counter that they would go, you know, like 1, 2, 3, and they came back to, you know, so if you show that one again, 1, 2, 3, went on, and they ended it with this one. I swear to God, I think they must have looped it, because it was in the 30s and 40s, and the thing was just ding, 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 ding. It was hilarious, because you knew they were joking around with it, so... But very, very good, very highly recommended movies. Like I said, this isn't something you're going to want to show your kids. You know, this is something that, if you're interested in these topics, i.e. censorship or movie ratings, and I've always niggled at movie ratings, because my whole thing on it, I think movies should be rated, but I think that they should be rated like the video games are rated. Video games are rated very good. It's just the pussy whip parents that have been conditioned into grabbing the checkbook every time their kid whines that dooms the rating system, because they don't bother to care. They just want to shut the kid up. So it's like, oh, well, that's working real well then. But those are my movie thoughts for this week. I want to mention Blip FM briefly, because Blip is one of the things, honestly, I'm using to promote my webcast at this point. It's just a thing you can go, usually, and this isn't for all of them, but usually you can go in and you can grab a... link to a YouTube or any MP3, and you can plug it in there, and you can hit it, and you can send it out to very... my Blip goes out to Facebook, Twitter, and LiveJournal. But every time I post, all three services get it. So, you know. Is it spamming? Some days, you know, I'll have days where I'll post 4 or 5, but there are also days where I'll just post 1. You know, and I'm going to start using Blip now to post on Twitter and LiveJournal and Facebook when I update my MP3, my podcast. That way I don't have to go to all three. It saves me a lot of work. So, I mean, people who used to go, I may cut it out and go to the link on LiveJournal, because I usually post my show notes there too. But for Facebook and Twitter, why not use it? And it's a fun little thing. You can search, you can, like I said, plug in the direct link and just share with people. So, and it doesn't matter. As long as it's a media file, you can share it. So, but yeah, if you want to go around and you want to play around with something, that is definitely something that is fun to play around with. So, I don't know if that's everybody's cup of tea. Victor Squire, who usually is around to these types of things, is the one who got me into it. But it's fun. I like it. I think it's a really neat idea, and hopefully it'll continue on. I don't know. I'm going to take a break early here, so we're going to be running a little bit ahead. But actually, no, I'm going to talk about something I found kind of humorous this last... I'm not going to talk really about Facebook games today. I just haven't played Facebook much this week. I'm going to talk about ThunderwoodCollege.com. It is something that was mentioned on Reap's, on one of Reap's shows. I can't remember which one, but I believe he actually had the guy who runs it on. He's a neat guy. So, but it's basically being able to go and get a degree. I don't even think you have to pay for it. Let's go and try it. Your name, school, college, School of Alternative Medicine, School of the Arts, School of Business, Department of Education, School of Engineering, Humanities, Information and Computer Sciences, Physical Sciences, School of Ecology, Social Sciences, or School of Theology. Degree, Bachelor of Arts, Bachelor of Fine Arts, Bachelor of Sciences, Master of Arts, Fine Arts, Sciences, Doctor of Arts, Fine Arts, or Sciences. And here are the diplomas, the disciplines you can get in. Accounting, acupuncture and acupressure, astronomy, administration and supervision, baromanology, I've never even heard of that, biology, business administration, chiropractic, community counseling, culinary arts, curriculum and instruction, cryptozoology, divinity, early childhood education, English as a second language, feng shui, genealogy research and study, global management, healthcare education, healthcare management, healing touch, holistics, human resource management, intelligent design, internet technologies, justice and security, literature, magnetic therapy, marketing, marriage and family therapy, mathematics, mental health counseling, music instruction, music performance, naturopathy, numerology, new media, parapsychology, podcast production, there's the one I'm going to get, public administration, reflexology, Reiki, this is something else I've never heard of, school counseling, special education, symbology, teacher education, and technology management. So let's get a Bachelor of Arts degree. In podcast production, just for the fun of it. I mean, that'd be the one I'd go for. School of Information and Computer Sciences. Bachelor of the Arts. What the hell? I mean, that's probably the only thing I'm qualified for in this whole thing. I'm not qualified in mathematics anymore, so... Create diploma. Oh, and it's a PDF file. Awesome. I am still going to save this. But yeah, you can go ahead, you can make your own diploma. So go ahead and try it out. It is strongly recommended. Just for fun. I mean, what the hell? How often are you going to get to create your own diploma? And you can actually print this thing out, I'm sure. It's just a little one-page thing. It says, the Regents of Thunderwood College, on the nomination of the faculty of the School of Information and Computer Sciences, have conferred upon Matthew Ullman the degree of Bachelor of Arts in Podcast Production, with all privileges thereto pertaining, given at Laguna Niguel this 19th day of April in the year 2010, and signed by the guy. Got a little gold seal and everything. It's cute. I'm definitely going to be... I'm going to be printing that as soon as I can. I'm serious. That's going to be hung up on my wall. That's cute. But, okay, I've got time. I've run myself up to where I need to be. Listen to Foamy this week. And Foamy has done yet another fan mail. He's up to number 14. Now, the reason I'm playing this, and Reap, I don't know if you listen... But if you do, Reap and Polly, you two will get a huge kick out of this. Foamy is answering fan mail, and one of his... Anybody with a sense of humor about religion, get ready to crack up, because this is good.
Then with the fan mail. Dear Foamy, why is Jermaine a cock-sucking whore?
Hey.
Dear passer of judgment, Jermaine is what she is because circumstances within her life have pushed her in that direction. Factoid 1, she's a poet. Poet equals poor. Factoid 2, she lives in New York City. New York City equals expensive. With that being said, both factors lead to an unhappy situation where a lack of funds is the only outcome. And so, one does what they need to in order to supplement their income. I know a touch of reality in one's entertainment makes for unhappy viewing, but such is life. Not everyone is born with a silver spoon, not everyone has a kick-ass job that pays them $300,000 a year. And in this economy, one does what they need to in order to survive. Hopefully, this answers your question and educates you on some of the minor workings of the economy and enlightens you on the situation some people have to deal with. Go choke on your caviar, you rich condescending asshole. Your lord and master, Foamy. Next motherfucking letter, yo, what up with you writing? Dear Foamy, I like Jermaine's new look. She's mad hot, yo. I'd hit that. You're not supposed to hit women, sir. That's bad. Next letter. Dear Foamy, can you send me a lock of Jermaine's hair? Kind of difficult to do with two-dimensional imaginary characters. So, no. Next letter. Pay attention, because it's the next letter. Dear Foamy, you're not my lord and master. Jesus is lord. You are a blasphemer. Go to hell. Dear worshiper of random Mexicans named Jesus, I congratulate you on your ability to worship other races you feel are superior to your own human mind. The Mexican people, as a whole, are very historic and a hardy race with a lineage that reaches back into some of the greatest civilizations on Earth and should be treated with great respect. However, I personally find it rather imposing to pray to Mexicans named Jesus for random crap. Some of these Jesuses have enough trouble finding work and supporting their family and don't need to be bothered with your prayers for a larger penis. Please leave all Jesuses alone and try to accomplish your own goals without begging for their help. And I'm pretty sure you can mow your own lawn. Your backup, Lord and Master, just in case Jesus doesn't come through, I'm always here. Foamy be with you. Next letter! Dear Foamy, I found a website that has Jermaine naked, so I'm not asking to see her naked because I already saw her naked. You know, these fucking fan arts, man. Control yourself, people! Fucking shit! I'm out. Screw this! Fucking fan art nudity! Got it!
And it is time for the Bozo Criminal of the Day. Bozo Criminal from today for today comes from Memphis, Tennessee, where Bozo William Hastings broke into a residence and stole numerous items, including a generator, sunglasses, and several bottles of cologne. Before leaving, our Bozo also raided the fridge, taking out several bottles of hot sauce and inexplicably breaking them against the wall before fleeing. The fuck? The homeowner returned just in time to spot our Bozo. Just in time to spot our Bozo was walking across the yard in the direction of a nearby gas station. Police were called and our Bozo was quickly arrested. It seems he was rather easy to spot. He was covered in hot sauce. Busted. That's not even really funny. That's just kind of sad.
Well, let me think about it. If, as an apparently non-corporeal universal concept, I can think.
And we've got the thought of the day, which is by Jared Diamond. Tragic sins become moral failures only if we should have known better from the outset. I guess. Something to be said in arguing that, probably, but I'm not going to bother. I'm trying to think of where to go now, because I've got a topic that I've had on here for a couple of weeks, and I'm just not sure if I want to try it. But you know what? Fuck it. We will. This is something I know will probably get me bitched at, but hey. When I was listening to Dread Radio a little over a month ago, they were talking about a book that had just been published. I think Ed Kraft's company did it. I'm not sure, but he had the book. It's Nazi International. And there we go, Nazis, ooh geez. You know, anyway, I was reading it, and they're talking about something that's always interested me, and I've never really found much on, and that's a device called the Nazi Bell. It's hypothetical as to what it is or where it was or anything. There really isn't anything on it, really. Some people have claimed that it was a UFO, and here they talk about it as a device to look into the past, like a television. Obviously can't influence it, but you can witness it. You can get more accurate, you know, details on it. I don't know. I always thought that if you were going to do something like that, that the gate would only apply to the spot that you were in, meaning it could show you the past of the area you're in, but, you know, couldn't do anything other than that. So if you wanted to, say, go see, you know, the assassination of Lincoln, you'd have to set up this machine in the balcony where he was shot to be able to see it. You know, if you wanted to see the Battle of Gettysburg, stand on a hill overlooking Gettysburg, and then you can see it, but you can't just, you know, you can't Google Map drag, you know, from wherever spot you want to look at. You have to go to that location. That's how I have always seen it being able to work anyway. But then again, it's a science that, you know, even understanding the concepts, if it's possible, that I do, I have no way to technologically bring it forward, so I don't know. You know, like I said, it's just something they put in there, and I can honestly see that one, because I can understand that. But, you know, and that would be great help to them, you know, if they found a way to, say, look at the past. You know, they could study military defeats and whatnot and use it, you know, learn from your mistakes type of thing. Anyway, they're talking about it, and, you know, they mentioned red mercury, which could be like anything. It's just kind of a code word for red herring, basically, sounds like. They just kind of wander on it, but then they looked up. They had a link called the Kecksburg UFO. And here's the interesting thing about that, is with all good UFO stories, there seems to be so much tangle. The stories are so entangled and so confusing and so contrived in some cases that you just know they're doing something. They're lying to protect it. Now, the way that they tie these two together is that the UFO, quote-unquote, that supposedly landed. I'm saying supposedly. I haven't done any much more research, so if anybody happens to be listening from there, I'm not dissing you or dissing that. I'm just saying this is what I read. I haven't been able to go. I will be able to go to the place where it landed, although I'd love to. But somebody saw a bell-shaped object crash. All photos were taken away. The guy who supposedly reported on it had a couple of guys basically say this or you ain't saying anything, so he had to say this complete bullshit, and it just crushed him. But then you have, on the other hand, you have these, oh well, it was nothing, or this thing didn't even land here, it landed in fucking Canada somewhere, you know, it was a satellite, you know, and it's bullshit, you know. It's just the kind of story that skeptics like me, who I will accept, they're probably, you cannot say in the entire history of the universe that we're alone. At some point, some sentient life in 13.5 billion years has to have come about at some point. I mean, you can even argue that the dinosaurs were sentient. You know, they were life, they thought, they survived, they, you know, we can't tell if they talk, but then again, we can't tell if sheep talk. Sheep bite each other, I doubt they're just, you know, saying hi and, you know, whatever. I'm sure they talk somehow. You know, they socialize. Dolphins, case in point, they're very social. So, you know, it's how you define intelligent life. I consider dolphins to be very intelligent. I consider ants to be very intelligent. Have you seen how organized they are? You know, it's open to debate. But I would say very, very easily, I hope, that within 13.5 billion years, We are not the only life form to exist in the universe. In fact, I'd say that would have to be a definite. Now, here's the problem. Yes, intelligent life has existed in the universe. The problem is, look at the time frame. Is it still possible that one may exist somewhere in that universe at the same time that we do? If so, are they technologically more advanced? You know, could be like the Vulcans in the Trek universe, where until warp drive was invented, they knew we were there, but they didn't care. It was like a zoo to them. It's like, oh yeah, we'll go study them under the glass and we'll go off because they're nothing of note. You know, maybe if they blow each other up, we'll put a little footnote in it, but until then, they're nothing big. So, I don't know. You know, their idea was more, and this I can believe, was that it was a terrestrial or an Earth-made UFO, unidentified flying object, which is all a UFO is. So, if it was a plane or something that was made that by somebody in secret that crash-landed that there were no notes on, that would be a UFO. It would be an object that was flying, it crashed, and it's an unidentified object. So, hey, there you go. Doesn't mean that it's an ET. That's where I think a lot of people get confused. As they think UFO, they think ET, or... I've only seen it once. Richard Dreyfuss movie, the one with the huge-ass thing that plays music. Whatever. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. They think that kind of stuff. And that's not always what's intended. So, you get... I think that's where a lot of the confusion in the UFO thing comes from. Yes, you've got people like Art Bell, and you've got people like George Norrie who say that aliens are around. And who knows, maybe they are. I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying that just because you don't know what it is doesn't mean that it isn't from Earth. So, just keep that in mind. But the Nazi UFO, one of the things that make it seem like it might be that is they were thinking that they may have been working on a magnetic form of propulsion. Meaning, if I'm understanding the theory correctly, I don't have the notes in front of me, that it generated a magnetic push, like an opposites attract, like forces repel. It basically generated a force close enough to the charge of the ground that it lifted it up just on the charge. You know, that's all that's fueling this thing is electromagnetic charge. And because of that, you know, it was maybe not a cleaner way. They were talking about several people dying due to radiation of the thing, which is possible. I mean, the only way to generate that kind of force, even now, would be a nuclear reactor. Or a nuclear substance of some kind. And considering we're talking the 40s, they probably didn't have very good shielding from it, which means anybody who was going into it was basically signing their own death warrant, because they'd be killed by the radiation. Nowadays, you probably could build it. I wouldn't be surprised if I could find a Nazi schematic for the Nazi Bell. I would not be too far surprised to find that through some means, and I'm including quote-unquote top secret, but by some means that I couldn't find all the pieces to put that thing together. In fact, I'm pretty certain I could. What would it do? That's the thing. I don't know. Like we've said, it could be a UFO. The people in Kecksburg seem to think that that might have been a possibility. It also could have been like we said, a time television. Now, would my problem mess with that? Where, like I said, it would work as long as you were on the spot. You could view the past history of a piece of land. Maybe. I don't know. It would certainly take a force about that size to make a hole. You know, I would guess that instead of propulsion, then this would mean that the forces Because it sounded like the bomb of the bell was spinning. It would basically use those forces to open a portal in space-time, which, thanks to Einstein, we know is connected. Meaning that you could go back in space and time. But, you know, say you don't want to travel. Maybe there is a way to open that, and the faster you go, the further back you go, where you could see events. I think that'd be rather interesting myself. Because you're talking to the one person who doesn't want to be immortal to say I'm immortal. I want to be immortal to the line of the human species. When the human species finally dies out, that's fine. I can die out. I just want to know how we're going to end up is basically the deal. As long as there's one or, you know, a couple floating around, I want to stay alive because I want to figure out what they're doing. I want to figure out how they're doing it. I want to figure out why they're doing it. That's my thing. You know, I've already figured that if I can donate my brain so, you know, they could, put it in a machine or some kind so that I could continue to exist if through the brain that is how you exist. I'm going on that theory. Then I would gladly do it. Thoughts by Cody, apparently. The theorized magnetic lift, creating the same side charge to create... Yeah. Actually, it wouldn't be that hard with earlier tech, a large enough electromagnet, where it would be harder to do nowadays, given the sensitivity of technology. Well, see, but there's got to be some ways that you could shield the new technology from that charge. You know, lead. Lead's very good at that. It'd make the thing extremely heavy, but if you're using it for a time television, it doesn't have to necessarily have to lift. If it were, you know, the UFO, yes. But if it were strictly for historical... how do I put this? If it was strictly for historical viewing, it wouldn't matter how much the thing weighed as long as it was... in some means mobile, as long as you could move it to where you needed it. So, that's it. That's a good point, though. I like that. And that's true. A lot of things... That's one reason I buy 70s cars. It's because it's so easy to fuck up a car nowadays. You can kill your car just by hooking up your jumper cables wrong. Because you'll fry the computer inside your car. And then you're fucked. I hook it up, I'll blow up my battery probably, but I have no computer in my car. So I'll just go out and get a new battery, which I probably would have been better off doing anyway. The inherent danger would be extreme magnetic charge would cause destabilization of neuron electric charge in the human body, which would have similar look of radiation poisoning. Well, there you go. Maybe they were working with electromagnetic charge and thought, because they probably wouldn't have been able to differentiate between the two, that instead of radiation poisoning, it was magnetic poisoning or electric disruption that was killing the people. You never know. All I know is the little I found out. But I'm going to get off of the Nazi thing just because I know that makes people squeamish. I don't know why. I mean, they're still around, but that's because, and this is one thing that I found rather interesting. Actually, I'll do this one next. That I found rather interesting. When they signed the peace treaty with Germany, there was no Nazi official there. What does that mean? That means that the Nazi party never had an official sign the peace treaty. So they never signed a peace treaty. To them, war is still going on. It's still, you know. And that, you know, a lot of people will say, well, that's just bullshit. Well, no. But go ahead and look it up. Maybe the guy was wrong, though I seriously doubt it. The only people who had to hold to that peace treaty were the governments who signed it. Oh, I've been zapped too, Cody. It hurts. I've been zapped enough. It's damn nasty. Yes, it is. I got blown back 6 feet a couple of times by one. But they were never... There is no peace thing that you will ever find related to World War II that will have a senior Nazi official signing it. Therefore, the Nazi Party... They went to the German government. They didn't go to the Nazi Party. So, it's a neat little loophole, I think. One other thing, and I was going to mention this real quick since we were talking about music earlier. I was reading Rolling Stone. They're talking about the top 40 reasons to still believe in music or rock and roll or whatever. And number one was the Black Eyed Peas, which I've read. Honestly, they sound like a very neat band. I don't know what, if anything, of theirs I've heard, but as we've already said with what Cody mentioned, it isn't that I probably haven't heard it. It's that when I hear it on the radio, the guy's already said who it is and what it is, so I just won't ever know what I'm hearing. But apparently, William was discovered by Eazy-E, who was a rapper in the mid-90s. In the late 80s, early 90s, who died of AIDS. And it struck me because it said that he died in 1995. And I'm like, holy fuck, because I still think about that sometimes. No, not talking about the Treaty of Versailles. I'm talking about, I didn't say Treaty of, I just said World War II. So. The Nazi Party wasn't around in World War I. But 15 years since Eazy-E died of AIDS, that really hit me. Because then I think about all the other people, wrestlers primarily, but that's just been because I see it in the news so often, like Kurt Hennig. The oldest one I can remember is in 98 when I moved out here. Ravishing Rick Rude died. And the British Bulldog has died, and I didn't know it. Owen Hart died ages ago. But, you know, I still think about that every now and then, and it just baffles me because I never equate time period with when they died. For me, sometimes it's still like they died yesterday. So, I think it was Brian Clark who just died. But still, it was one of those things, it's like, man... It depresses you a little bit, because then you remember Anthony Ainley, the master, died on me, and I didn't realize it. But it's... Then gets you kind of wondering, okay, who's next? I mean, I'm still waiting to hear Bobby Heenan's died, just because he's fallen out of public, and he's had some health problems lately. I'm just afraid, and it's to the point now, I'd still be sad, but I'd be more thank God, because it sounds like he's just gone through hell, and if dying's the best way to get him to stop hurting, I'm all for it. I know that sounds cruel, but damn, give the guy a break. But, yeah, it's just... This may be about an hour and a half show, I'm only down to two things. We'll talk about Second Life for a little bit. Second Life... I don't know. Second Life is going through its phase. I was talking to Toki about this. She's a member of the brood that I like talking to. And because she asked how I was doing. I said it's basically peaks and valleys. I'm not sure which right now. Because I've got a friend, Ali, who I like running with. I like talking to. She's a writer, which makes it even better. And if I am in a relationship, that would be who I'd be with. But she's works swing shifts, so she's not on all that often. She's in Australia, which means she's 3 hours off of where I am. I think the last time she was on was 6 days ago. So it's just... it hurts, because I seem to have this real... bad habit, or real bad luck, of I can sit, I can talk to somebody, I can chuckle with them. The moment I start trying to get into a relationship with them, they're gone. It never fails. It's happened to like the past 5 people. They've gone just within like a day or two. And it really gets you down because it's like, well, Jesus Christ, what, am I radioactive or something? This should not be happening, constantly happening. But it does, so I don't know. We were talking, because she's having relationship troubles too. She just broke up with the lady she was with. And they were a cute couple. I don't know why they broke up. But I was telling her, because we were talking about, you know, me being in a fraction, because I'm not now. I haven't been since June of last year. And I told her, I said, you know what? If Gamora had been available to me, Gamora's the second life sim for the demons, and I still hold New Gamora. I know there are no pictures of it, really. I still hold New Gamora as the most beautiful build in the Cola chain at the time. I think it was just perfection. I know I'm sounding crazy, but that's how it was. That's how I saw it. See if I can find a video for it. I know there was one. Yes, there's a short film on YouTube about New Gamora. I'm going to link to this. It doesn't show you much, but it gives you an idea. And maybe this will really get people looking at me like, he thinks that's beautiful. Well, I walked it. I spent 3 days walking around. Every time the demons would have a party at their club there, I would be there if I could. But here's the thing. Spider, whether she's been in a faction or now, or she's on her own, has never had backup. Meaning, if she wants to go talk to somebody that she's uncomfortable with, she really needs a reason to do it. Or she won't do it, because she knows she'll be outnumbered if something goes wrong. It's the same thing for going places. If she doesn't have an excuse to go somewhere, she won't go. I would have loved to have been in Gamora much more often than I was. And that's one reason that both New Gamora and Opal Island, I went and had the volcano and everything, and it wasn't a city. I'll say this, it too was one of the prettiest places ever. But I didn't go there. Why? Because I was GM in Cola. And Cola is where I was supposed to be. And it depresses me. Because there are two places now. Gamora closed. Tentacle Futanari Prolapse. What is it with you and Futanari? If you want Futanari, go to LA. You'll get your fill, probably in more than one way. I know you'll get it for tentacles. So, Prolapse, I don't know. I don't think anybody's ever done that. It's one of the few things they haven't done. But, I'm sure they have somewhere. But I was telling her, I said, if I would have been able to go in Gamora, and New Gamora was lost because of billing. Regular Gamora, which is around now, has, I swear to God, Cherry's dragging her heels on this. Has to have been open for months now. I always see demons in it. But she won't open it. And I told Toki, I said, if Gamora had been open when I left the clan, I'd be in the brood right now. Because I love Gamora. Gamora was home for me. I mean, I wasn't a demon. I didn't RP there really, but when I really just needed to relax, when I needed to focus, I went to Gamora. I went to New Gamora. It was peaceful for me. It was calming for me. And this is a representation of hell. So for that to be calming for me probably says as much worse things about me as a person than probably should be told over public airwaves. But there you go. But I really just, I miss it. I miss it a lot. I miss it. I miss Opal Island for the same reason. Opal Island is the sim that that Don owns, and it's Angela's CCS sim. But she doesn't do anything with it anymore. She's in Warcraft now. And I really regret introducing her to Warcraft, because she and Don warned me, look, you introduce her to this, she's going to go off on this. And at the time, I did it innocently enough because I saw her really having troubles, really getting overworked, really getting emotional about Second Life to the point that really was not healthy, so I was looking for a way to get her to break out of it, get her something else to focus on so she could go back to L.A. when she wanted to, but she'd also have a place that wasn't L.A. when she needed it. I didn't do it to get her out of Second Life, which is what happened. And I kick myself every day for that, because she had one of the prettiest places until she thought that Opal Island had to be a city, and then the city was changed, and now the city's taken down, now Opal Island ain't shit. You know, and it hurts, because Opal Island as an island with a volcano and with everything was so much fun. But she won't do it anymore. You know, nobody visited, and nobody told me this, and nobody told me that. I'm like, well, I didn't tell you because I thought it was obvious. I love the place. And I got about 24 people asking me when Opal was shut down the first time, where's Opal? Why can't we get to Opal? And she wouldn't change it. She wouldn't bring it back. So I was like, okay. One down the tubes, and then thanks to billing, and it was again with Chari. Well, nobody ever went to New Gamora. Well, why would people willingly go to hell? I don't think she was looking at it in that light, but think about it. Spider's been to heaven once in roleplay. I did go up to visit it a couple of times when it was in satellite, but that's just because I knew people there. I've only been to it once for roleplay, and I never went back. Like I said, with New Gamora, a.k.a. Hell, I went there when they had DJs, when they had somebody in the club, because I knew a lot of the brood, and I liked a lot of the music they listened to. Otherwise, I walked around it a couple of days, but I think I only ever roleplayed there once. Why? Just because I wanted to try it. After that, I never did it again. Because I couldn't think of a reason. I had no reason to go to hell, basically. It wasn't that I wouldn't very openly welcome one. But nobody ever gave me one. And for a character like Spider, who is very self-preserving. I mean, she's the only Drider constantly there. I've been there since September or October of 2006. I'm going on my fourth year in Kola. And I'm the only Drider that has been there since around the time it opened. In September, I think, of 2006 to now. I'm the only Drider, and we had a few. Cody, I'd be willing to go. I'd willingly go to hell, the actual hell, only because I have a nice corner office overlooking the Stygian pits and the lava rivers. Going to go into paranormal spook mode here. I actually believe I have been there twice. Once in an area I call the Blood Fields, where I was buried, it's like if you'd be walking on an unplowed field. Like, I know, Cody, you've played Farmville. So you know how the mounds look when you just plow a plot. Imagine that. Blood. I mean, literally, you know, like the little thing over was just a skim of blood. Hard enough that it was ground. That tightly packed. That's where I went the first time I went there. And yes, I was buried into it in a rather unique problem where there are maggots and worms and things like that, but you don't get eaten. You're constantly regenerating the pieces that they're eating. So you never really leave. I'm sure part of me is still there. The other time, I actually wrote a story about it until the computer crashed. And I can't find it now. But the other time, I ran into a demon and was not very well treated, let's put it that way. And I've still got some theories on what that one was all about. I'm still not sure. I may try writing that one again. That was disturbing. That's one of those ones I can't believe is a dream because I just remember it far too clearly for that. I mean, I'd have to think about it a little bit now. That was years ago. But for quite a while, I could still recall things like that. Sounds like Tartarus or the Fields of Oblivion if you do your religious research. I don't. And see, that's why I take these things more at value. Because I don't know about... I mean, I've heard of Tartarus. But I've never really researched it, which is why when I have experience like this, and then somebody tells me stuff like you just did, I tend to take them more solidly because you're telling me things that I didn't know at the time that I had it. You're corroborating things that I never would have known. So, no, does that mean that I'm happy I had that? Not particularly. Can't know many people who would willingly say who would say that they were actually happy that they went and had a couple experiences in hell, but you never know. Some strange people. I'm gonna play Zero Punctuation next. He's revealing Red Steel 2 this time, so get a drink of water and then we'll finish her up.
The term innovative Wii title is about as redundant as an internet cafe in a nudist colony, and it doesn't exactly moisten my bedsheets because innovation has never been the Wii's problem. Just dodgy hardware, poor third-party support, and processing power from somewhere around the Battle of Waterloo. The Wii Motion Plus has solved one of those issues, and after the bland, happy-clappy casual game of Feeding Trough of Wii Sports Resort, it's finally time for a hardcore title to make use of the technology. It would be churlish of me to dwell on how long it's taken for the Wii to start sucking less, which is why I'm going to do so. 3.5 years, roundabout, Nintendo, that's decent speed for a fucking glacier. But anyway, here's Red Steel 2, and I've got to admit, this is probably the best motion-controlled combat I've seen on the Wii. Of course, it still isn't very good. It's like being the best at jerking off to your sister in the shower. You only won because no one else entered, and you probably shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. You may recall that Red Steel 1 was a launch title intended to showcase the Wii's potential as a hardcore gaming platform, and was so miserably awful it was like cutting off your own head to showcase your potential as an umbrella stand. Red Steel 2 follows on from the first game, but takes the perspective of a different character, in a different setting, time period, and art style with completely different gameplay. Okay, so it's completely unrelated, but since Red Steel 1 had little in the way of redness or steel, I'd suggest just calling this new one Red Steel and retroactively renaming the first game. Ubisoft did a whoopsie in its pants. Red Steel 2 is a slightly Tarantino-esque amalgamation of Western and Samurai story about a bloke who comes to some city in the desert, apparently for a cosplay convention, and who gets beaten up by bullies for his big gay red coat, and who vows to fight back against them in a convenient ascending order of strength. And it has a cel-shaded art style, because this is the Wii processor we're talking about, and it's either that or looking like an episode of Reboot. Unlike most Wii games, where the various Wii flails could easily be exchanged for pressing buttons on a nice traditional controller, and you wouldn't have to look like you're slap-fighting your imaginary friend, Red Steel 2's sword combat actually needs the motion sensor. You have to slash, thrust, and block in various ways to break and counter corresponding enemy strikes and blocks, and swipe wider and faster for strong armor-breaking attacks, and if there are a lot of armored dudes around, then there's no faster way to dislocate your shoulder besides maybe jerking off a wind farm. However, the marriage between Wiimote flinging sword slashes and pointing at the screen to aim and look around is an unhappy one, with lots of furniture breaking and milkmen fucking. Try to turn around too fast and you might end up seriously menacing a nearby pot plant, and since in sword fights I usually hold the sword vertically, whenever a fight ends, my character immediately looks up into the sky, as if the murdering has made him suddenly introspective. The game has a sort of hub-based mission structure, but since the missions are all given in a strictly linear order anyway, its only purpose is to mercilessly pad out the time you spend in these semi-desert ghost towns until you acquire a conditioned hatred for Team Fortress 2 maps. It just means having to traipse back to the mission room after doing everything to get a pat on the head and a biscuit from your sensei, who will more often than not teach you a new technique. Now, it must be said, Nintendo really don't think much of you. The fact that they actually released Wii Music rather than, say, murdered the creator and burned all his writing speaks well enough to that. Not only does Red Steel 2 insist upon making you play a tutorial for every single new move you learn, but it won't be satisfied until you can demonstrate it 5 or 6 times, and it shows a little video of a non-threatening, attractive young white person doing the motions in case you jammed a sensor bar up your nose and forgot what words mean, together with the fact that the game literally forces you to watch a 5-minute video in which a lady explains how to use the Wii Motion Plus to her dyslexic 2-year-old, it makes me wonder why Nintendo releases products at all if they're afraid we'll all decapitate ourselves with the warranty cards. Red Steel shares the increasingly common problem that a poorly implemented upgrade system bends the difficulty curve over a snooker table and labours exhaustively at its upper thigh region. You start off the game as a mewling schoolgirl flailing your switchblade comb at the ankles of the big lads, and by the end of it, you're plowing through them so hard they barely have time to give a contemptuous guffaw before their tongue waggles gurglingly at the spot where the upper portion of their heads used to be. A game has to balance player upgrades with increased enemy threats. While you're learning 500 ways to put a bit of shiny metal between someone's ears and sellotaping new bits of armor to your coat, the enemy aren't doing much more than figuring out how to block basic attacks. About halfway through, you learn a special move called the Tiger, and the game is officially over, bar a few more hours of shoulder exercise. It's a block that stops any attack and immediately breaks the enemy's guard, leaving them open to becoming the deadest things in sliced bread. And this applies to any enemy attack, including bosses. It's like setting the cat among the pigeons, and the cat has an assault rifle. And this is the sort of game where pocket change flies out of broken pot plants, so while not needing them in the slightest, I bought all the life and armor upgrades because there weren't any sounder investment opportunities for the 200 grand in my pocket, and then I was just a tuft of flesh bobbing around somewhere inside a ball of unbreakable steel and leather. Thinking back about Red Steel 2, my memories blur together somewhat. A dreamlike haze of orange scenery and acoustic guitar, sprinkled with arbitrary samey gang fights with Jason Voorhees' samurai friends. After a while, the awful dialogue and mission briefing started to sound like the adults in the Charlie Brown and Snoopy show, and I fell into a trance following the little green arrow like it was a carrot on the end of a fishing rod, winning fights and completing missions with no difficulty or understanding. While the shell around the swordplay mechanic is a rather empty and uninteresting one, I will admit that the swordplay itself is quite invigorating in a way that using a normal controller wouldn't be, but my question is this: what other kinds of hardcore gameplay could the Wii Motion Plus possibly be used for? What else besides sword fighting combines a life-threatening scenario with holding a straight object at different angles for various situations? Because all I can think of is being an air traffic controller at the Hindenburg disaster.
And we're back, and I'm thinking of trying to do the podcast notes. Let's see what the map looks like here. I'm pretty certain I can... Whoops, wrong podcast. I'm pretty certain I can guess who's going to be the top downloader anyway. It's usually Beijing. But, you know... I only usually go with them because they're usually the only ones who have any decent amount. They're like 30 or 40 all the time. So, we'll see what we got here. Few pro stats. Da-da-da-da. I think we got a New Zealander. I've already picked on New Zealand. I may pick on Australia. Actually, I see one I'll pick on. I've got one. I just found our random person of the week. It's not in America, and I probably should do one in America at some point. It's in Finland. Oh my god, I got downloaded in Helsinki. Woohoo! Okay, podcast notes. The supposed home of Ludwig Borga, who is also known, I believe, as Tom Hain. Is a wrestler who died, another one who died, I think, last year. See, I love this. This is really something that I should not be allowed to play with. Because I love zooming in as absolutely far as I can. And I showed Cody this. This thing can get pretty damn close. Looks like a... Oh, yeah. Holy Jesus, I'm almost hoping there... I can't see this. Yes, unfortunately I can. I can... No. Damn it, it's covering it. No, there it is. Good Lord. I'm not sure how to say this. Helsinki. Finland. With one. Where'd it go? Ah, there it is. Holy Jesus, that's an ugly name. But, just lost it. Karamzinkent. Holy, that's an interesting name. Karamzinkent. Okay. So that is our random person, Karamzinkent, from Helsinki, Finland. And yes, this is the German accent that I am doing for the Sherlock Holmes play, The Final Problem. Holy shit. Beijing has 41 downloads this week. So, it is very obvious who that is for the individual downloads. Okay, most downloads. Downloads. Individual. Like I'm near. Like I even need to guess. It's always that one in Beijing. Okay, 1, 2, 43. Or no, 40. Yeah, 43, 50. 51, 54, 55, 56, 58, 61, good grief, 61, 64, 68, 71, 74, 81, 82, 83, 85, 86, 88, 90, 91, 92, 96, 99. 99, it looks like. God. I told Christina that. She's like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, well, yeah, it would be, except I don't know anything over there. Me and Cody were joking about that. It's like, fuck, they don't get anything. How can I be picked up over there? And I wish I knew. I really do. I really wish I knew how I was getting picked up over there. But I'm going to talk about Champions Online. That is my game right now. That is the game that I love playing. Spider Farina has hit level 14 and is back in Millennium City, so I'm done with the Canada sweep, and holy Jesus, was that a pain. They tried to give me a quest that I had turned in, like, the day before, all over again. I was supposed to try and kill 150 Viper soldiers. And I know I had done it. I know I had turned it in, so I dropped it, said fuck you, and went back to the city. It's like, I don't want to do this again. It was hard enough the first time. I'm a muzzle little fucking brat if he doesn't stop whistling. He has this horrible thing about whistling out of tune at the top of his lungs until somebody says, shut up, get out of here, and, you know, leave us alone. He's trying to do it because he's grounded until Christmas. Oh my god, I'm around Reap Soul Radio right now. The hell did they drop so far? I am definitely screenshotting that. Reapsoul Radio and Rendell's Review. Actually, I think I've had that happen with Hoofcast, too. They were really in the top of Podomatic, too. I wonder what happened. Huh. Don't know. They dropped 64 and I dropped 34, but we're still in the top 500, so, meh. I'm not worried about it. But yes, we have a Mid-Millennium City. I've just gotten done hunting down escape prisoners in a construction building and taking out the leader, which was fun, because I'm a supernatural. And I was going to break habit and get a passive that I've found on one of the new champions I made this week. That's just awesome. It's called Defiance. It's a muscle ability that as you take hits, you build up, you get tougher. To the point, it's got 6 ranks, and by the time you're in number 6, there's not much that's going to whittle you down. And that was in a character I made called Tank 27, which is a homage to Charlie 27 of the Guardians of the Galaxy. The other two I made are the couple Rendell and Althina. Rendell being a... both of them are a custom race in the Star Trek universe that I've created. Rendell is a race of reptilian-type creatures. He's got kind of the crocodile thing. It's not as wide. It's about halfway size. That's what he's using in Champions, because it's the only thing close. And instead of skin, you see their muscle. It doesn't, you know, there's no cancer or anything with it. It's just they do not require skin for some reason. So you don't see the skin. You see, like, if you would take somebody's skin off, and how you'd see just their muscles. That's what it is for them. They're very quiet race. They're called the Arthurians. And they are scholars. They document the history of the planets. You know, the Klingon Empire, the Federation Empire, the Romulan Empire, the Vulcan Empire. They are the library. They're the Library of Alexandria of the Trek universe. Everything, you know, they're in a cloak planet. I haven't figured out if it's a natural cloak or if it's something that the Romulans and Vulcans gave them or whatnot, but they have, their planet is cloaked. It's on the, right at the border of the neutral zone for all three powers, Federation, Klingon, and Romulan. Right at that point is where Arthuria sits. And the high-up governments know they're there. They report, you know, they give things. Now, granted, they're giving them in their own way, but they're also getting from the other sides, too. So, Rendell was a member who left because he wasn't happy just documenting. He wanted to meet the people. Well, now, the problem being an Arthurian is you are tied to wherever you are. Your biology, your chemistry, everything is tied to the planet that you are on. So you go with the natural cycles of wherever you are. The kicker being that if you're not rooted in that way to something, you start, your body and your chemistry starts binding with whatever's closest. And if you're in space for too long, that means if you're in space, deep space for too long, you become virtually immortal. Even if you do go to a planet. Because your body has synced itself with the slow energy of the universe. Well, this is what's happened to Rendell. Rendell left, and because they are so far away from anything, and they don't have transporter technology, they don't need it. They get all their shipping and, you know, imports and outports via ships, trading ships. he was put on one. Basically, they said, look, if you're going to leave, you're going to leave in this way. And they put him on the absolute slowest ship. So by the time he reached his destination, he's pretty much screwed. It's while he was out wandering that he met Althena, who is the other of my duo called the Chalkeen, who are silicon-based life forms whose skin is literally chalk white. They do, and when they flake off, it's like a chalky residue. They are also, for the most part, they're not immortal, but they're ridiculously long-lived because they don't breathe, really. Their intake is rock. You know, it's stuff that their biochemistry is very slow. So they age very, very easy. So those two are partners in crime, or, you know, partners in life. And they're the two, they're my little additions to the Trek universe. I don't really do much with them, just because I don't know how. And you look at fan bases, and they're not very happy about you adding new things to pre-existing areas. If I tried to write about Etheria, I know I'd get inundated with, oh, well, how could they have not been mentioned by now, and how could somebody have not run into them by now, and you can't cloak an entire planet, you know, and, oh, biologically that's impossible, and it's like, look, this is, in our universe, Star Trek is science fiction. In their universe, who knows? So, that's why I really haven't done anything with them. It isn't that I don't want to. It's that I don't know how to approach. Writing fan fiction is tricky. When I write, and it's usually adult fan fiction, but when I write, I don't use very popular characters. And there's a reason for this. It's because I don't want to get blasted. Or I'll use existing situations and just kind of rewrite them. You know, give it an alternate universe feel. Because comic fans are used to that. But that's why, you know, they're, as they are, probably going to be the closest that they are in Champions Online with what I want them to be physically. Until I can get over my fear of writing them, that's about where they'll stay. But I did have fun. I was looking up because I was running as Rendell, and it's like, look, I probably won't make another hero for a while, so I want to try and get everything right. And I looked around, and I remembered this lady saying that, oh, and he found my Reggie for me, and I remember hearing her say, well, I ran off, and I left Reggie, and oh my god, and I'm like, what the fuck is Reggie? So I went looking, and Reggie is a cat. This lady got scared, had Reggie in his little cat carrier, was running along, got scared, put him down, and ran off, and now she feels guilty for it. And so your job is to go find the cat carrier and return Reggie to his owner. And it took, and you know, and Cody, I'm sure, is already seeing where this one's going. Because I have such a fascination for cats, I went and I spent 25 minutes looking for that cat carrier before I finally read the description and figured out where I was supposed to be going. But I felt so, and I, you know, here's a sappy moment. I felt so good about myself for being able to get the cat back to its owner that when, it's just like Warcraft. You know, if you've done the Draenei area in Warcraft, the ending of the tutorial's essentially the same. You have people sitting there cheering you, you know, somebody listened to Sergeant Slaughter apparently too much because you got a 10 hut, you know, and, or 10 Shun and 10 Hut. And every time I see those two, I just think of Sergeant Slaughter. But then, you know, they'll have people saying, oh, well, Spider did this, or Rendell did that, or, and, of course, here's the lady saying, oh, he found my Reggie for me. And it just, you know, really sappy, but I feel kind of good about myself. It's like, yeah, damn straight. And it took me 25 minutes to find him. But that's one of my little guilty pleasures. It's just doing things like that. I had that with the Draenei the first time I did it. One of the things is there's a night elf on an island who used to live there with his wife and daughter. And because some huge crystal basically destroyed their home, the animals around it went mad and apparently killed his wife and daughter. So one of the grisly quests you get put on is to look for their remains. And it even says their his family's remains. Well, if you take time, and this I didn't find out until I did it the first time, his daughter's still alive. So if you take the time to run around the perimeter of the island, you'll find her. And that just makes me feel good, too. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll bring the family back together. That's my job, so. I'm very easily satisfied, let's put it that way. Had something else I wanted to say. Oh, yes, there is, and this is for, I'll have to look up his name, but the guy who did Lee in True West, I swear to God, did the voice acting for Champions, because when you go to the radiation area, Robert Kaufman, I think is the character's name, does a little monologue, and there are times when he sounds exactly like Lee from True West. I mean, exactly. I cannot say, the first moment I heard it, it's like, that's Lee! It's like, oh, no, well, it sounds like him, you know, it's really cool. So, De-Satanica Customer Appreciation Day? What the fuck? How did I miss this? Oh, yes, that's back when they had the strip pole in the window. I'll link to that just so that people can, you know, look at me funny again. That's cute. They haven't had that there in a lot. That tells you how old this is. But I'm going to close with a skit of, I think his name's Jerry Webb. Let me look it up. It's a skit from the 60s from Johnny Carson that my dad sent me, called Kleptomaniac. And it was spelled wrong, and I think that was intentional. Spelt with a C instead of a K. Let's see here. Jack Webb. So let me write that down. This is Johnny Carson and Jack Webb doing a skit from the 60s, and it is just completely worth it. I mean, it's going to be... I dare anybody to keep up. So, go ahead and try. But I'll be surprised if you do. I will talk to you next week, and who knows? Maybe Cody will be with us. Take care.
This is the city. Los Angeles, California. Some people rob for pleasure. Some rob because it's there. You never know. My name's Friday. I'm a cop. I was working the day watch out of robbery when I got a call from the Acme School Bell Company. There'd been a robbery. There's been a robbery. Yes, sir? What was it? My clappers. Your clappers. Yeah, you know those things inside the bell that makes them clang? The clangers. That's right, we call them clappers in the business. A clapper caper. What's that? Nothing, sir. Now, can I have the facts? What kind of clappers were stolen on this caper? They were copper clappers. And where were they kept? In the closet? Uh-huh. You have any ideas who might have taken the copper clappers from the closet? Well, just one. I fired a man. He swore he'd get even. What was his name? Claude Cooper. You think
that,
he...
That's right.
I think Claude Cooper copped my copper clapper. Get in the closet. You know where this Claude Cooper is from? Yeah. Cleveland. That figures. That figures. What makes it worse, they were clean. Clean copper clappers. That's right. Why do you think Cleveland's Claude Cooper would cop your clean copper clappers kept in your closet? Only one reason. What's that? He's a kleptomaniac. Who first discovered the copper clappers were copped? My cleaning woman, Clara Clifford. That figures. Now let me see if I got the facts straight here. Cleaning woman Clara Clifford discovered your clean copper clappers kept in a closet were copped by Claude Cooper, the kleptomaniac from Cleveland. Now, is that about it? One other thing. What's that? If I ever catch kleptomaniac Claude Cooper from Cleveland who copped my clean copper clappers from kept in the closet, yes, I'll clobber him.
It's a beautiful night out there, isn't it, boys and girls? I haven't seen a night quite like this in 100 years. In fact, this is no night to be inside. Let's turn off our radios.